The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho,
starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride.
Yearning, he tried to believe.
I wanted to kick it up with some heavy rock and roll because the godfather, the forefather of all things heavy metal is here today. Lemmy from Motorhead is with me. He's such an icon that I'm going to take care of a little business first and get right to Lemmy. I'm going to show a little love to Amazon, proud sponsor of Talk is Jericho. Then we're going to get right to it with the most iconic frontman in heavy metal. He's a pirate. He's an outlaw. He's Lemmy. And remember, like I said, Amazon is a proud sponsor of Talk is Jericho. Big thanks to them. Big thanks for you guys for doing your online shopping through my Amazon links, which is the easiest way to support Talk is Jericho and help me bring you such iconic first-time guests like Lemmy, like Hulk Hogan, like Batista, like Paul Stanley. You're only going to hear them here on Talk is Jericho. That's thanks to you, and that's thanks to Amazon, and that's thanks to you supporting me by using Amazon. Because remember, every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for the Amazon USA, the Amazon UK, the Amazon Canada. You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon, including the latest Motorhead album, Aftershock. You get all the Motorhead records on Amazon. You get all the Fozzy records on Amazon, including Do You Want to Start a War? The new single, Do You Want to Start a War? On radio now. My new book and third New York Times bestseller, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. You can buy that as well. Listen, you can buy anything you want or need at Amazon. I brought some bracelets there the other day, bought a couple action figures for Ash the Fish Expert, bought a couple books, whatever you want. The truth is, when you use my Amazon links, you can buy anything. It's not going to cost you extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. So if you happen to be doing some online shopping, do it through my Amazon links. Help out this show in the process. You go to podcastone.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You bookmark it so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right, the Y2J WWE Winter Tour has started. It continues Friday in St. Louis. Remember, this is going to be your last chance to see me in the ring for a while. I'm only doing house shows, no TVs, no pay-per-views. I'm not going to be at the Royal Rumble. I'm not going to be in Raw in Poughkeepsie. Only the road shows. It starts in St. Louis on Friday. I got Vegas on Saturday. I got Houston on Sunday. Don't forget, after the Vegas show, I'm going to be at Body English at the Hard Rock Casino. I'll be hosting a party there after the matches in Las Vegas. That's the weekend. St. Louis Friday, Vegas, Body English, Houston on Sunday. All right. And then after that, I continue on. You can find those dates on WWE.com, but I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get straight to the iconic king, pioneer. All that is metal is this man. He's a legend. He's an icon. He is Motorhead. He is Lemmy right here on Talk is Jericho. Are those like vintage guitars that you're looking at?
No, these are 2014.
Okay.
But they're all these horrible colors, you know.
Yeah.
They don't make them like they used to, you know.
What do you still play in the Rickenbackers?
Yeah.
That's kind of been your trademark for 40 years.
Yeah, the Rickenbacker carved one. I like them because they're so weird, you know, shape. Mm. I buy them for looks, not because you can always
make
it sound good, whatever it is.
Right.
You know, it's just you got to like the look of it.
So you just buy it just for the look?
Yeah.
For the cool factor?
I just put new pickups on them old, so they brought the new ones out, you know.
Did you start playing the Rickenbacker because McCartney played it for a while?
No. I played one because I just like the look of it. It looks like JFK Airport, you know.
Yeah.
1965 modern, you know.
Yeah, totally it does, right? Did you ever like the McCartney Hofners that he used to play? You
know, no, that violin thing.
Yeah.
That was covered off a Gibson bass. They used to make a Gibson shape like that.
Oh, really?
With the backwards tuning heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, Little Richard's band had one.
Really? You know, I have a 67 Hofner that I found at a guitar shop, and it's so light.
Yeah, I know, because they're hollow, you know, completely.
Yeah, it's like playing like just a little wooden box or something. Like
yeah, but then Germans are good, man. It sounds good. Well, it sounds good.
You know, speaking of Germans, everything, we're here in your apartment here in L.A., and you've got so much cool stuff on the wall. I mean, I'm just looking at all of these daggers and knives, and they're all like meticulously placed on your wall here. I mean, tell us a little bit about, I mean, this is your one of your hobbies, is collecting World War II, German, Army, Nazi, whatever you want to call it, artifacts.
Right. Well, you know, people keep thinking I'm a Nazi because of it, you know, but I tell them, I collected railroad tickets. You wouldn't think I was a ticket inspector, would you? You know?
Right, yeah.
It's true, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And if I was a professor at a college collecting, nobody would say a word, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because you're Lemmy, suddenly you're a Nazi collector.
Well, I'm pretty... I got a black girlfriend, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd down up past my shoulders. I'd be the worst Nazi you've ever seen in your life.
What got you interested in all this stuff?
Somebody gave me an Iron Cross.
On the road?
And I really liked it. That's the best design medal ever, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, you're wearing one around your neck right now. You always have worn one for years and years and years.
This is the First World War one, yeah.
Yeah. So someone gave you an Iron Cross and you thought, I want to get more
and
of
then
these?
Somebody gave me a dagger, one of them brown jobs, you know, the SA, the SR,
mm-hmm.
The Stormtroopers.
Oh, is that, okay, is that what it is? So what are, like, are these all...
Those are all, a couple of them are genuine, but most of them are modern. They're just imitations of old famous stuff, you know.
Are they all from different battalions or something? Or?
Yeah, they are, yeah. They're from, two or three of them are from the same, you know, one.
Mm-hmm.
But like most of them are, and the black and, with the black lead, and they got an SA monogram on it instead of the SS.
What does SA stand for?
SR. Sturmabteilung.
Oh, okay, SR. And then SS was the other?
Stormtroopers.
Yeah, Stormtroopers, right. Now, I see over here, too, you showed me you have some really cool uniforms kind of on a half mannequins over here. Yeah. What are those?
It's a Wehrmacht Army General and an SS Obergruppenführer.
Okay. So, like you said earlier, all the bad guys always have the best uniforms.
Yeah, well, the SS one is... I picked up the thing in Germany. This one of our boys came up and gave it to me. It's a SS Streifendienst,
mm-hmm.
which was the police inside the SS.
Oh.
You know, like pulling up the SS guys.
Yeah.
Like MPs, you know, like that.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean were they? You know, Jesus Christ.
It's amazing to think it was only... Gosh, 70 years ago, 75 years ago, yeah. Just the atrocities and how the world has changed so much. Like, unbelievable.
No, it hasn't.
You don't think?
They're just going on in different places.
Yeah, more of it.
Saddam Hussein, chemical weapons against the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at Ukraine and Russia now.
Yeah, that's true. Like, it's just the domination of the destruction of the Jews. And
I don't know. I mean, the Russians still don't like the Jews. Austria still doesn't like the Jews. The Germans have made such an effort to put it behind them, you know, like that they made this terrible mistake in the constitution of the new Germany after the war.
Mm-hmm.
It said anybody could be granted political asylum.
Mm.
So now half of Berlin is Turkish, you know.
I noticed when you go there, there's a lot of... I worked in Hamburg for about 6 weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot of kebab shops and that,
yeah,
you know.
But when you go to the laundry, all the Turkish kids would hang out there and throw their laundry into my laundry machine. If you went to get a bite or something, you'd come back and they'd be going through like, hey, that's not my, you know, underwear or whatever it may be. Where did you get a lot of this stuff? Are these things that you had to actually...
Most of them I got in America, but a few of them I got in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them I got in Poland.
Are these things that you had to smuggle across the border to get them back?
And I brought some of them in my carry-on bag before 9/11.
Wow. Isn't it amazing how much has changed to travel since 9/11?
It's really become tedious now.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather drive most places.
Well, that's one good thing about Europe is you can't just hop on the bus and drive from country to country.
Yeah, but there's no borders now, yeah.
Yeah. Now,
I'll have a look at that one. See that one?
Oh, the sword?
No, this one on the top of these books here.
This one here?
Yeah.
Is this a replica or is this an actual?
No, it's a real one.
Wow. So this would have been made probably in 1935 or something? Or...
Yeah. That's 78 years old.
Yeah, we're holding a 78-year-old dagger and it looks like it's in immaculate condition. I'm going to put it right back down. How much would that cost, something like that?
About a grand.
A grand for that?
Maybe 15.
Wow.
Because of the blade, you know.
Yeah, like we're talking about, stuff hanging everywhere. In here, what's like the crown jewel of your collection?
Oh, I don't know. A lot of them are, you know.
Really? Like really rare things?
I'll show you the good stuff after if you got some.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, I got time. Absolutely, man. So how have things been going for you? I was at Wacken last year. I was standing on the side of the stage. I threw my panties at you. You didn't acknowledge me. You wouldn't wave back.
But you haven't got very good tits.
No, I don't have. My tits are terrible. My ass isn't bad, but I was standing right on the side of the stage and watched your set, because I remember you weren't supposed to play because it was really hot. It was like 100 degrees or 110 degrees, and you played 30 minutes, and you sounded...
It wasn't the heat that bothered me. It was my back.
Your back. Wow, you had to cut the show short.
Yeah, it was 38 minutes.
38 minutes, yeah. But you sounded good for the songs that you did. And
it was a great sound. I was really pissed off, you know.
You had to stop really...
When you get to my age, your body just keeps failing bits of it, you know.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're holding the bass, the Rickenbacker around your neck.
Well, mine's super light. Okay. I don't know why, but it is.
So that was the big thing, because I remember... Everybody, the rumors are flying. Oh, Lemmy is you know, he collapsed backstage and all this stuff. I know you didn't. I saw you went and sat down for a couple seconds.
And then I went to the dressing room.
Yeah, and I remember you said, that's it, like, that's all I can do. But that was the big rumor. And, you know, that was kind of the last gig that you played for a long time. Because you had a lot of things that had hit you in a row. Health problems, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I know. The last year and a half have been really... Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had diabetes since 2000, you know, and then I got in quick succession a defibrillator put in, mm-hmm. and then kidney failure, and then a hernia, just to, you know, put the cherry on the cake.
Cherry on top, yeah. That's the way, right? When one thing happens, things just start to break down.
Well, I'm hoping that's the three, you know.
three in a row, right? So how was that after, I mean, the rumor, you drank a bottle of Jack every day for years and years.
Well, no, it was about... 3/4 of a bottle, but I mean, you know, it doesn't. By the time you get to that amount, it doesn't make much difference.
Yeah.
But I don't get drunk anymore.
Like, even when you're still drinking whiskey,
it's a social thing. Just the taste I like. Mm-hmm. You know, standing around the mates, you can't go, oh, and a raspberry, shake.
Yeah, right.
The exactly. Rainbow, you know.
Yeah, can I have a Shirley Temple, please?
Yeah, right. Tom Collins. You know.
Yeah. I had, obviously, wasn't drinking that much today, but I used to drink Crown Royal all the time, and it made me feel like I go crazy.
I know, it's terrible.
Terrible. So much sugar in it, it's so heavy, and I switched to vodka, too.
Do you ever taste Australian wine?
Australian wine, no.
When you should be able to stand a spoon up in it, there's so much sugar in it.
It looks like German dark beers, like it's so thick. It is like a
like Guinness.
Yeah, exactly. And you can just see, like, why am I drinking this? Yeah. Where vodka is look a lot smoother.
It. Look what it's doing, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said.
By itself, you know. Right?
It's bubbling. So was it hard, though, to stop drinking whiskey after drinking it so much?
No. It goes so as I didn't like the taste of it anymore as well, which is a big thing for me, you know.
Was it just more of a habit to have the Jack and Coke in your hand?
Yeah. It's social, you know. Mm-hmm. You make a drink and he buys you, you know. It's
right.
Like,
yeah, meet your friend.
Or to signify if you meet a new buddy, you know, you buy him a drink to cement the friendship, kind of, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So one of them things, you know, it's very hard to get rid of.
So
and then the smoking thing is social too, but I gave that up bang overnight. I've started a little bit now still, but I only do about 2 cigarettes a day.
Is it one of those things they said stop smoking and drinking or else you're going to have some more problems?
They always say that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's a standard phrase, you know. It's like, well, like penicillin when you've got the clap, you know. And it doesn't matter, you know. Because if it's going to heal it, it'll heal it.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, you go back and they give you a stronger one, you know.
Yeah. Was it, for example, like the smoking, just having it in your hand socially, is it hard to get rid of that habit of it?
Yeah, and offering your friends a cigarette too, you know, all that stuff. But, I mean, it gets ridiculous for some people. They think it was heroin, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to die, you know.
Did you find it was hard too because, I mean, you're... You know, Lemmy, the rock god Lemmy, you know, the man who can't be brought down.
But I have to shave this idiot every morning, you know, I'm not fooled, you know.
Yeah. But that is that reputation too, though, you know, fans or people say, Lemmy, have a drink with me, you know, you're Lemmy, this is what you do.
I know, and they keep leaving me bottles of whiskey, you know.
Can you switch that to vodka, please?
Yeah.
Anybody
who's
listening, if you're going to bring Lemmy,
it's
whiskey.
It's cheaper, too.
Yeah, it's cheaper. Bring him vodka instead. No more whiskey, please.
Then you get a lot of pop-off arriving, you know, and shit like that.
Yeah. I switched to just Grey Goose and ice. That's all I drink. Never get a hangover. I mean, it's basically an alcoholic's drink because you're drinking straight vodka.
Yeah, but you don't get a hangover.
You don't? It's the, I tell all my friends, if you don't want to get hangover, just drink vodka. But it has to be top shelf vodka.
Yeah.
Not the, you know, not the battery acid that they give you sometimes.
Well,
you
like Kettle One's good. I like that.
That's good too. Well, you got some Grey Goose.
And
over
that's some Icelandic vodka.
Oh, was it Reykjavik or something?
Reykja.
Okay, I hadn't tried that before. Is that good?
Well, we'll have to taste.
we'll have to have a drink. Two gentlemen having a drink. So, I mean, yeah, you know, with all these years of your reputation of, like, being the party guy, I mean, you're almost like a, like Keith Richards type of a thing. You know, it will last forever. And did you ever...
When he was my age, he had to give it up, too.
Oh, Keith did. Yeah, he doesn't do anything more either, right?
Oh, I don't know about that. You know, there's a lot of dents at the side of the wagon trail, you know, like... But, you know, when you've been doing it all your life...
Just the way it
was. I mean, I was taking acid in 1967, you know, and pills, it was all pills speed then. And, you know, it's like heroin. The Welsh Parliament once asked me to speak in front of them on drugs, because apparently you'd seen me do an interview where I said I hated heroin because of what it did to people. And I said, I think you ought to legalise it, you know.
Legalise heroin.
You've tried throwing the police at it for, what, 100 years? Mm-hmm. And there's still more on the street than there was then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's failed. Just admit it.
Mm-hmm.
If you legalise it, you can, like, let out the amounts you want to and, you know, tax it. And we'd all be rich, except the junkies, you know. But, like, it's stupid just throwing the cops at it because they could be doing worthwhile things instead of putting non-violent offenders in jail, you know.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was a time in Texas you could get 99 years for two joints.
Really?
Yeah, and it's not that long ago either.
Wow.
In 64.
Do you feel the same way about marijuana should be legalized as well?
All of them should be. You might as well. If people want something, they'll get it. It doesn't matter what you think or I think or the government thinks or the guy on the street thinks. If somebody wants something, they will find it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So after the Vakken gig, you took, well, that was about a year
off.
We did it
this year.
You did it this year? Well, the big return?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it, and you did a full set?
Yeah.
Because I know you guys killed it at Coachella this year, and you've done quite a lot of shows. So coming back on stage after taking that year off, did you have to change anything around? Or?
No, not much. Except I don't have the Jack Daniels on stage anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what I like. I like that fizzy water.
Pellegrino?
You ever tasted it?
Well, I've drank it before.
Yeah.
You're talking about on stage?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I've got, you know, it's the only way I can bear to drink water. Because I hate water.
Okay.
I think it tastes awful, you know. And that's the only water I like. Otherwise, I'll eat a glass of ice, mm-hmm. crushed ice, you know.
I'm like that, too, though. I don't like water unless it has ice in it.
Yeah, or Mio or something, you know.
Yeah, something, you know. So how was your voice singing-wise? You still have a lot of power? Because I didn't get a chance to see you guys
I was in the middle of my illness when I recorded Aftershock, and you can't tell.
You can't tell. That's a great record.
Some of it I had to sit down and sing because my legs were so rough on my back, you know, but we got through it all right. And then went straight into the hospital again.
Yeah. Did you again?
Great fun.
So what is your touring schedule now? Do you do, like, just a week at a time? Or?
No, we just did June till August.
Every night or every second night?
No, every second night, yeah, in Germany and festivals, you know, Belgium and Holland.
Mm-hmm. So you're playing hour-long sets?
Yeah, hour and a bit, maybe.
Yeah, and you felt good with those?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great, yeah. I mean, let's talk about your singing style, too, though. We mentioned about the power that you have, and you sing up, which is interesting to me, because I always kind of sing more down.
Yeah, I know James Hetfield does, too, and
yeah.
I said, I don't know how you do that, because you're creating, like, a bend like a toilet.
Right, yeah.
And you have to push the thing around.
Uh-huh.
If you sing like that, it comes straight up.
But you're looking straight up in the air.
Yeah, well, I can't bear to look at the audience, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. How did you discover that style? Just something that you'd always done?
Yeah, I always did that. Not to the extent I do now, but, like, mm-hmm. I always preferred it dead on and not down, you know?
Right. And how about as far as your bass playing goes? I mean, your style is very, very... it's like a copywritten sound. You know, everyone knows your bass playing. But it's got a lot of heavy
distortion.
Actually,
it's a bad copy of John Entwistle.
Oh, is that where it came from, huh?
I got the John Entwistle Award, Luke.
The Ox and the Lion, Bass Legend Award. There you go. And he had the ultimate rock and roll death.
Yeah,
Toe with hookers and
can't complain.
It's like the cliche. So was he one of your heroes when you were first starting?
Oh, yeah. Well, not when I was first starting. I started a long time before I saw The Who.
Mm-hmm.
The Who were not until 1964. I was a rock fan in 57.
That's one thing I love about Motorhead, when you say we play rock and roll. A lot of people say, talk about the heavy metal of Motorhead. I've always seen
it as metal. Yeah. And all that. I mean, it's so... The ultimate example is Manowar, and death to false metal.
As they're wearing loincloths on stage.
I know, and no ass in their trousers.
Yeah, right, the assless chaps. But, I mean, Motorhead's always, to me, has been a heavy blues band.
Yeah.
I hear it all the time.
Heavy, fast blues.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of blues-tinged, anyway.
That's right, yeah.
So, some of it is like heavy metal, but a lot of it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't say we was a heavy metal band.
Well, I mean, definitely...
There's elements, I mean, I'm influenced by the Everly Brothers, Fats Domino, Eddie Cochran, Little Richard especially, all them guys, you know.
So you love, like, the first wave of rock and roll was your first...
Yeah, I remember when there wasn't any.
Wow. So there what was there? Like dance bands?
It was like old-time dancing, and it was spelled with a Y, old-time, you know.
Glenn Miller or whatever?
Yeah, well, no, older than that, some of it.
Wow.
A lot of it was sort of Glenn Miller-ish. And there's all kinds of novelty records. There were always novelty records. How much is that doggy in the window? Woof, woof, you know. Are you kidding me? I'm a blue toothbrush. You're a pink toothbrush. It was like living with maniacs.
Yeah. And that's what they were playing on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it like Radio Luxembourg or something, where you had to kind of have a pirate radio operator to hear the rock and roll?
Well, we had
music?
A lot of pirates around our shores because we were an island. So we had a lot of converted old, like coasters and that, you know, Radio Caroline, Radio London, you know, there's about 10 of them just outside the 3 mile limit and playing, you know, they said we're playing them for ourselves. We just happened to have a very, very good transmitter.
Yeah.
Used to throw records out the window. What's this? Put it on. Hit the seagulls with it. The sea floor there.
So when did you hear, what was your first rock and roll song or band that you heard? Do you remember?
That I heard.
Yeah.
Was Elvis. He was the first thing anybody heard that really spoke to us.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Haley was before him.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't the real thing. We knew that.
How do you mean
we knew he was on the way there. Well, he was like tubby, you know, and he had that kiss curl on his forehead.
Yeah.
And they all dressed in these tartan jackets, you know.
Receding hairline with the curl on his
forehead. Yeah, Hillbilly and his Comets. And
Hillbilly and his Comets?
No, Bill Haley. Yeah, Bill Haley. Comets.
Yeah.
Haley.
So when you saw Elvis, though, you knew that was the real deal because he was a good-looking guy?
Well, he looked good, you know, and he looked sharp, you know. He looked as if he knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Haley was probably obviously being wheeled out, you know, because he went to tour in England, and he was huge before he went to England.
In England?
He was massive, man.
Wow.
He had 3 records in the top 10 one time.
Really?
And he did one tour, and it finished him.
Why, because he wasn't good live?
Because they weren't. They were good live sounding, as long as you shut your eyes.
Oh, to look at them.
But it was obviously, you know, cabaret act, you know.
So did Elvis come to England ever?
Never.
Never came?
He never went anywhere. He never played anywhere except once in Germany when he was in the army.
Mm-hmm.
Over there, he played there once. But that was a private gig, apparently. He landed in Scotland once while his plane changed.
Oh, okay.
You know, you got gassed up, you know.
That was a big thing, too. Elvis comes to Scotland, you know. What about Little Richard? Did he ever come?
Yeah, he came quite a lot, and Buddy Holly, too.
Did you ever get a chance to see them live? Either one of those?
I saw Buddy Holly, but I don't remember it.
Why?
Because my father took me, and I was so ashamed of myself, I went and stood outside.
Why were you ashamed of yourself?
Well, because your father doesn't take you to rock and roll shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially because even that was bad enough. He was my stepfather as well.
No, even worse. The double whammy.
Wow.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Listening to Talk is Jericho.
Are you enjoying this so far? I know I am. This is true rock and roll history with a rock and roll legend. More with Lemmy right now. Mm. But I do know that you saw the Beatles at the Cavern Club.
Yeah, I did that.
I mean, that's insane. Like, tell. I mean, did you live in Liverpool? Did you take a journey?
No, it was
there?
Only 60 miles away. We stayed right up there. You know.
Wow.
And the train from Liverpool to London, know where I was based. It was £1. £1.
Yeah.
Now it's like 200 and something.
But was £1 the equivalent of 200 back then?
Well, it must have been, I guess.
I mean, £1 is probably a lot of money for a young lad.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But you could get it, you know, you could do, get like tips for jobbing around the house or whatever. Uh-huh. You know. So, I got the old suede shoes with the buckles on, you know, and the crepe soles.
Yeah.
All that.
So tell us about that experience. What do you remember about going to the Cavern Club? Because it was just like a dingy little basement, right?
They were fucking great. I mean, they made me change my hairstyle.
Tell me about that.
I mean, that's big in a kid's life.
Sure.
When he's been, you know, doing this all the time.
You had the Elvis thing.
It was down, you know. Oh, yeah. Everybody did.
Mm-hmm.
He was the only thing we'd seen that we wanted to copy, you know.
Until the Beatles came.
Yeah. Because all the American singers were... And the English singers were versions of Elvis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Fury and Cliff Richard, you know, when he started. Can't believe it now. He started out really good.
But it was heavy at the time, right?
Well, everything was heavy at the time. Before, it was like Eric Delaney and his band, you know. And how much is that doggy in the window?
Like you said, yeah.
You know?
And now you got two guitars and some pounding drums. It's kind of
Skiffle was heavy. You know,
and Skiffle was kind of like a rockabilly type,
yeah,
thing,
like
right?
Country, yeah.
Because that's when Paul and John met; they were in a Skiffle band, Carly and Lennon.
Yeah.
So, do you remember? Like, was it packed? Was it sweaty? Like
always.
Yeah, in the cavern. So
didn't matter who was on.
Okay.
Unless it was somebody really diabolical, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they'd have like bands at lunchtime. Used to gigs at lunchtime, and all the chicks would come there in curlers under the headscarf, you know.
Yeah.
Sitting there eating their dinner, you know, watching the Beatles.
Yeah.
And then they play again that evening.
So they do two shows a day.
You'd have five bands on the bill every time, you know.
So the Beatles would play like half an hour or something? Or
40 minutes, I think.
40?
Well, I mean, I was in the Rock and Vickers, and we never in our lives played longer than 30 minutes.
Really?
Well, we'd get our clothes torn off and that, you know.
Well, the girls would be running at
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. And listen, if you see 200 chicks coming at you with scissors... for a lock of your hair, you're going to outstrip them, man. I tell you, yeah. You're going to be knees well up.
That's why the Beatles were running all the time. They didn't want anyone to cut their hair.
Yeah, that's right, man. Those chicks, they tore our clothes off us.
Wow. So was that like in the London area? Are you talking about the Rock
no,
and Vickers?
No, this was Manchester.
That was one of your first bands or your first band?
One of my first bands, yeah. The Reverend Black and the Rock and Vickers. We never paid a penny of tax.
Why?
Well, we didn't want to, you know, because we thought we'd never had anything off them. Why should we give them anything off us? And I was making 200 a week clear, which is a real lot of money for those days.
Absolutely.
66, you know. And we all had, like, Siggy had a Jaguar, I don't know if Ford Zephyr. No, I had a Jaguar. Ian had a Ford Zephyr.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, over the top money, you know, in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
None of that, you're waiting around for somebody to pay you.
Yeah.
You know.
Waiting 2 weeks for your check.
Well, you know, we had a speedboat that we used to go water skiing on Windermere in the Lake District, so we can't be bad, can it? We had a big luxury flat in Cheetham Hill in Manchester, which horrified the locals because they were all Jewish. A lot of them were Orthodox, you know, and we'd be out there on the lawn on towels, sunbathing with chicks all over us, you know. Tsk, you know.
So was that band kind of a like a, you know, a 60s rock type band, like a Beatles type vibe?
Yeah, we used to play we played a Beach Boys song, even a Bill Haley song we played. So we used to do a lot of good songs. We adapted a Who song for a single.
Because a lot of his bands had a lot of, like, you know, three-part harmonies. Did you guys have that in the Rockin' Vickers? You've talked about playing a Beach Boys song. That's all harmonies.
You know, I've never been in a band where we had good harmonies.
Okay.
Because these two clowns can't sing enough. Well, the drummer won't, and the guitarist can't.
You talking about Phil and Mickey? Phil can't even speak English. What are you talking about?
You see, a lot of them, perfectly decent voices. Most of them better than mine, but they won't sing anything because they freaked out. You know, but Eddie Clark would never sing.
Really?
Yeah.
Could he sing?
He did all the time I was in the band with him and Phil Taylor. He sang two songs.
So he could sing, he just didn't want to.
Yeah.
You know, that takes a lot of guts to go in front of people and sing, though, when you first start. You know, it's
just, oh, yeah. Terrified, you know, but like it wears off.
But it's hard to play and sing, too. I mean, that's something I always take great respect for guys like you and Hetfield.
Oh, I cheat, you know.
How?
I just play the straight chord.
Got it.
You know, you don't play the bass line or interferes with the think singing, you know.
That's how Sting used to start when he was a
string guy.
You know, like Walking on the Moon, dun dun dun. Walking back to your house, dun dun dun.
Have you ever noticed that B.B. King never plays while he's singing?
Oh, really?
He does a flurry of notes and then he stops and he starts singing.
Ah, oh, that's the secret.
And then he comes in for the solo, you know.
Nice. See, that's the little tricks that you can play.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the great trick that turned the rock world around was Eric Clapton tuning.
How do you mean?
Well, in those days, you only got the ones with the wound third.
Mm-hmm.
The third G string was wound.
Mm-hmm.
They were all for acoustic guitars, see?
Okay.
So, you know, you couldn't bend them or end them. So what Clapton did was he had a banjo fifth for a first string and a guitar first for a second and a second, which was plain, third. And it meant you could bend them all over the place, you know. Now, of course, you got all kinds of gauges, but we didn't have then.
So was that the reason why Clapton is God? Because he was able to do things that
He figured it out. And him and Jeff Beck were the first ones to do it. And I guess Pagey a bit later. Because Pagey was only a kid when he started doing sessions.
And how about Hendrix? You know, the big story is that you were a roadie for Hendrix. Does that mean, like, did you go on tour with him, or did you just load in one day? You did. Yeah. How did you get that gig?
I didn't know anybody in London when I first went down there. And I called Neville Chesters, who used to work for The Who and the Mersey Beats before that, who I'd known for a couple of years. And I rang him up. I said, can I crash on your floor for a couple of days? Because I haven't got anywhere to live yet. He said, sure, come over. And he was sharing a flat with Noel Redding,
who was in the Jimi Hendrix Experience.
Yeah. Bass player. So I was already there when they needed an extra carrier and, you know, uncoiler. You know, that's all I did. I didn't have anything to do with the technical side of it. I still don't.
Yeah.
But I got to watch him for free every night.
So was it like a couple of weeks or?
Oh, no, it was about 6 months.
Wow. Did you ever?
We did TV gigs and radio shows. And
so obviously you hung out with him from time to time?
Yeah, I used to get acid for him.
It was one of your jobs.
He'd take seven and give me three.
He'd take seven and you take three?
Yeah, well, you see, they said acid don't work 2 days in a run. But we found out if you double the dose, it does.
It's always the way. If something works, do more of it.
I mean, I learned to play in such terrible states. I mean, I can play on anything. You know, you fill me full of sleeping pills and I'll still come up playing, you know. It was a good education.
Yeah.
It's like the Beatles in Hamburg. It's that kind of education.
Right.
That's where they first took speed.
Mm-hmm. Because they were playing like 6 hours a night.
Well, they were legal in Germany, and the woman in the toilet used to sell them.
Oh.
You know, in the old German toilets, it was that a woman sitting at the gate with a, you know, a load of dimes and things, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Marks.
Like the attendant or whatever. Fennies,
you know.
Yeah. Like the female, she was the bathroom attendant or whatever.
Yeah, right. So they'd come down, you know, and she'd slip him a few pills.
So, I mean, obviously, you have a pretty well-schooled foundation in rock and roll education after the Vickers, and you're touring with Hendrix. And so I know you were with Hawkwind for a while, but how did you start Motorhead? What was the idea?
Well, I got fired out of Hawkwind, and I thought, well, I kept getting fired for stealing the limelight, you know.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, I'm sure it was, yeah.
Because Hawkwind was a kind of a psychedelic
Well, yeah, I mean, I was as psychedelic as they were, you know. Yeah. It wasn't that. It was just our two experiences as well, and they frowned on that because they were genuine, you know, lovers of the forest and everything, you know. And they were so hypocritical, you know.
Yeah.
The most stone band on earth was our reputation, and they fired me for taking the wrong drugs. Because I've always said in my band, you can do what you want, except heroin. I won't have that near me.
Heroin?
Yeah, because it makes people into thieves, mm-hmm. and then it turns them into dogs, and then dead dogs, mm-hmm. right? And everything else doesn't kill you. The only thing I ever saw people die on was either overdoses of sleeping pills or heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever died on coke.
Mm.
Nobody ever died on speed. And I think that's very handy, you know. It doesn't kill you. Oh, good. Yeah,
yeah, let's take it. So you started Motorhead because you got kicked out of Hawkman for doing too much drugs, which is always...
No, nice. Just the wrong kind.
The wrong kind of drugs, more specific. So what was your concept of putting together Motorhead? Because you came from like the psychedelic...
I wanted to be the MC5, actually, more or less, yeah. I wanted to be the MC5. I was going to get a singer, you know. And it was hopeless, you know, because nobody knew how to... Or they were just lemons, you know, mm-hmm. personally, you know. You can't imagine being on the bus with them for 3 months, you know. Mm-hmm.
And that's half the battle, I mean...
That's three-quarters of the battle.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Because if you can't get along with them, you're stuck on the bus anyway.
Yeah.
So you might as well, you know, bend and shape accordingly, you know. That's where you learn tolerance, you know.
Right. And compromise.
Out in the human race, yes. Like compromise. But I've always said to them, my band and crew, I said, I don't care what you do either side of it. But when the gig comes, for that hour and a half, you're going to be on. Mm-hmm. You've got to do your gig, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, I'll fire you in a minute. But apart from that, if you can handle it, you can do whatever you like, you know.
Right.
I've always taken gear in moderation anyway, except for acid.
Mm-hmm.
And I only did that for, what, 5-6 years. And after that, it was just TGI, you know.
So how did the name Motorhead come about?
It's American slang for speed freak. Motor mouth.
Ah, okay.
It says it in the Blues Brothers.
Motor?
Yeah, when you go through that mall, you know, in the
yeah.
car, and you said for Motorhead.
Really?
Yeah.
I've watched that probably 20 times. I never noticed that. I have to check it out. When they're doing the mall chase, the car chase in the mall.
Yeah.
Pier 51, imports. how about Lemmy? I didn't ask you that. Where did the name Lemmy come from?
I don't know. I think it's a Welsh insult.
Oh, is it?
Because I was at school with 700 Welsh kids. I was the only English kid. So I used to spend all my break time and lunchtime fighting these Welsh nerds, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I learned that it doesn't matter. Fighting doesn't matter. Because if you knock a geezer down and you win, it doesn't mean you've changed his opinion one bit. You know, he probably just is more that way because you beat him,
mm-hmm.
you know. So there's no point in going around being a hard man, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's always somebody.
There's always someone tougher, right?
You know, if you're a gunslinger, there's always that guy with the buntline special or the, you know, the six loader.
Yeah.
Who would, like, shoot you full of fouls, you know. There's always somebody.
Yeah, always someone tougher, that's for sure.
You mean you must have gone through that with the wrestling game, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, wrestling's show business, though, right?
Yeah, I know it is, but, like,
you know, but
some blokes throw you harder than the others.
Yeah, and even when we used to go to, like, other countries.
I mean, there's some guys, you read the thing, and you, oh, no.
When you see you're up against them on the board, yeah. It was like that, though, in Japan, because there was a little bit more of a rivalry there between, you know,
sumo.
Americans and Japanese.
Sumo.
But even the Japanese wrestlers.
Yes.
You would have to really throw some stiff shots and be a little hard to kind of get a little respect from you, man.
It was only 6 years ago that they were dying for the emperor.
Well, exactly. Once again. So
charging into machine guns with a sword.
Yeah, and stabbing themselves if they didn't do the right job.
Yeah, you know, right. I mean, they're hard people.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you got to earn your
respect.
Never
mind all that cherry blossom bullshit, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're very repressed by themselves and by their society.
But then you'll go see them on the subway reading.
Yeah, but you get liberated kids and they're nuts, you know.
Yeah.
And all those cartoons, what do you call them?
Anime?
Yeah, anime, yeah.
Yeah, you know, or magazines.
I mean, those are disgusting.
Terrible.
I mean, we were in Thailand, and we went to this club, and these chicks were doing all this stupid, like, one kneeling on a card table while another one swung down on her on a rope with a giant penis strapped to her.
You've been to so many countries. I mean, probably almost every country in the world, I'd imagine.
Almost. India and Africa, and then I've done it.
You haven't been to India?
No.
Okay.
Never.
I mean,
girls' school went to India. They came back and they said they were really keen, but the government wasn't.
Huh? To have Motorhead there.
Well, it's very, very extreme, even for America, you know.
Yeah.
We couldn't get arrested when we first came over here. People were horrified by it.
Tell us, because you were so, like, at the time, this is the heaviest band on the planet. I mean, you guys are like
noisy.
Noisy, yeah. Loud.
Very loud, yeah.
You know, I mean, like you said, your bass tone is pure Entwistle, which is almost another guitar. So that just...
Well, it is, because I can't play bass. Not really good, you know. I play sort of bastardized rhythm guitar, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. At least your tone has.
I mean, I can play bass on it, but I'm comfortable with rhythm. I was a great rhythm player. I can't do solos on guitar, but I can play any kind of rhythm you want, you know.
Which is kind of interesting, too, when you made your decision to be a trio, like Motorhead being a three-piece band. Yeah. That's always reserved for, you know, Cream and Rush, where the bass player is very heavy, you know, a lead player almost as well. Like, yeah. Like talk about the
ZZ
Police.
Top.
ZZ yeah. Top. Every trio has, like, the bass player is just noodling at times as well, but you don't do that ever. It's all rhythms.
I don't like that jazzy feel, mm-hmm. you know. I don't like jazz. Mm-hmm. I don't like dance music. I don't like reggae, and I don't like hip-hop. I'm a rock and roll person.
Yeah.
Right through, you know.
But there was even a time, though, in Motorhead where we had two guitar players. What was the difference in the dynamic?
For 11 there? Years.
For 11 years, right. That's a big chunk of your history.
He died, you know.
I heard. Wurzel passed away just a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
He hadn't been in the band for
a few years.
He was
pouring a drink at the time.
Oh, was he? Okay. It's rock and roll.
He got to be a really bad drunk. It's a shame.
Is that why you had to let him go?
He left about three times, and we talked to him back twice, but the third time he wouldn't do it. And he went back to the woman who talked him out of the band. And then, of course, you have no conception of what it's like to be together all the time mm-hmm. if you're in a band. Mm-hmm. Away for 3 months, you know, come back for a month, go away for a month, come back for 3 months, you know. Mm-hmm. They're not used to seeing you every day.
Yeah.
And they don't like it. Mm-hmm. So then the thing breaks up, the relationship, and then you got the guy sitting there with his dick in his hand with no job.
Yeah, he lost his gig and he lost his girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Was there a different, was it interesting or weird going back to the one guitar after having two guitars for 11 years?
No, we were going to advertise for another guitar player after he left. Mm-hmm. And Phil said, listen, boys.
Yeah, that's nice.
I want to try being on my own, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you'll have to take over a lot of rhythm as well, you know that, don't you? Mm-hmm. So I, and he has, you know, I mean, the first, because he never moved before. It was me and Wurzel did all the running around. Phil used to be like nailed to the stage, you know. Yeah, yeah. And then this first night in Germany, this thing flashed past me and it was Phil. I couldn't believe it. You know, down on the knees and everything.
Yeah.
The funniest one was Brian May, who apparently had always wanted to play with Motorhead.
Really?
Right? You came down to Brixton's Academy. You played there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brixton Academy one night. And you came on for Overkill. Because he always stood, like, fairly still with Queen,
Brian,
you know.
Yeah, he let Freddie do all the work.
Flashed past me, on the knees. Ah, you know, it was great. And he came off stage and he was almost dying. He said that was great.
Isn't it amazing how much influence you've had on so many different musicians from so many generations?
I think it's the influence that rock and roll has, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't mean a thing until 2 years ago.
You didn't mean a thing until 2 years ago?
No.
How do you mean?
Well, it was the movie that did it, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because it was number one in the DVD charts in Billboard for 3 weeks or something.
Interesting. So that kind of gave you credibility.
Well, no, but it got me in front of people.
Oh, right.
You know, who never saw us, people like in, you know, Mississippi, you know, mm-hmm. and Alabama, you know, because we never seemed to have got gigs in them states. We had one in Alabama mm-hmm. once, Montgomery, but we never played Mississippi. We played Tennessee about three times, Memphis and Nashville, you know.
It's interesting how something like that, like a movie, can make such a big difference. I remember when the Anvil movie came out.
I know, yeah. For a few minutes, they were back on top.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But they didn't have, I mean, obviously Motorhead is Motorhead, so it's a different world. But people see it and they get the mainstream exposure and suddenly you're the
I mean, they toured with us back in 1979, you know.
Anvil did.
Yeah. Anvil, yeah.
Yeah. But you've toured with a lot of of bands. I mean, when you're talking about, you said like in the early
Aerosmith
days,
supported us once.
Aerosmith supported you?
No, in Hawkwind.
Oh, in Hawkwind?
Yeah.
Wow.
And let's see who else. Rush supported us.
Yeah, that must have been interesting.
Well, I
two Rickenbacker bass players.
I don't really like his voice a lot.
Yeah,
know.
It's a little grating.
I don't like them high voices mostly.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't have one.
Well, no, it's not that. I mean, I'd like to have a bit greater range because it's more fun, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've got a fairly good range as it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do all the harmonies on all the albums, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and you have a naturally gruff voice, too, so you're just singing within your range,
yes,
what you do
gruff,
best, you know.
Yes.
Is gruff the word?
Sounded like a griller on Valium, yeah.
So when you guys first started Motorhead, you mentioned like how you were so noisy and so loud. It was the heaviest thing on the planet at the time. How were you received at first?
I don't know. Led Zeppelin was still going.
Yeah, but you guys are faster, though.
Yeah, a lot faster.
A lot faster. I think that's what I mean, like the heavy and fast. It was almost like early speed metal or thrash metal or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of a response did you get? Were people going like, what the hell is wrong with these guys? Or
yeah, kind of. I mean, we did the first Aussie tour on his own.
Oh, the
Blizzard of Oz, you know.
Uh-huh.
We did half of that tour and Kiss did the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go on and do a half hour. And most of the audience was
just staring, mouth agog.
Yeah, or at the door, you know.
Covering their ears.
Yeah.
How did Ozzy, I mean, how was your relationship with Ozzy at the time? Because he was insane at that point, too.
Oh, wow, he was freaking crackers, yeah. I thought he was going to die.
From just all the partying, or?
Yeah, because he'd take dope, he'd take drugs when he was on his own, you know.
Just by himself?
That's a shame, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's going to get to you. And we used to keep finding him passed out, you know, but his wife saved him.
I've
never seen anybody save anybody so from such a deep hole and bring him back up, you know. We can all be proud of her.
Well, especially in his entire career, you know.
Well, yeah, and they keep having these terrible fights, you know, because she'll climb over the table and smack you in the mouth, you know, she don't care. I mean, there was one last night, actually, she was on a talk show and there was this model. And she was going, well, you know, you're married to Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, all that. And, you know, you're not really one of the, you're not very pretty, you know. Showing it up and threw a drink over it on live TV.
Yeah. It's funny with rockers because we're all scared of our mothers or whatever. And Sharon comes across as your mom yelling at you when she's mad.
Well, no, she's a lot better than that.
Okay.
Believe me. Her father was Don Arden, who was like a very short guy, stocky, you know,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was in fear of him.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story that I don't know if it's true, probably is. He went and hung Marriott over the balcony of the Holiday Inn.
Who did he hang?
By his legs, Steve Marriott from
oh,
the
wow,
Small
from
Faces.
Humble Pie, yes.
He said, sign the contract, and Steve said, F you, and he let go of one leg. He said, have you got a pen? That's it. It's too good to be true, really, the story.
Yeah.
You know, but he was kind of like that reputation, you know. And Sharon learned a lot of tricks from him, like body language and, you know, when to shout and when to talk, you know, and all that. Because it is an art, that is, as much as being a musician is.
Well, you need to have that team almost, you know.
You have to be a personality, almost rubs people the wrong way, you know. And if necessary, we can turn a few more volts on, you know, like, if you're going to be a cunt, you can have one straight back. I don't mind.
That's right, yeah.
Do what you like.
How did you think about Randy Rhoads? Did you ever watch him play?
Oh, yeah, every night, you know, because you would, you know. Because
mm-hmm.
Those were Ozzy's real glory days, his first album and with Randy, you know. Randy was so good. And he was tiny, you know.
Like, people don't realize those
moments. Like a doll's clothes hanging up in the dressing room.
Wow.
He was really, really small. He was like about Ronnie James Dio, about the same size, right?
Yeah.
But, and they were both incredible musicians.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter, you know. Like,
small
or short, fat or thin, you can still do it.
They played like giants.
Yeah, well, you know, he was a giant. Doesn't matter about how tall you are to be a giant.
Yeah, right.
Being tall and a giant, that's just being awkward.
Yeah. But a good guy, though, Randy?
Yeah, he was. I mean, I beat him at Asteroids all the way across America. I think he'd have been good at it with all that.
Yeah, this dexterity of the fingers, but you got it too. You know?
Yeah, yeah, but I ain't got so much anymore. My hands are starting to stiffen up.
I was going to ask you about that. Is it getting harder to play bass?
Yeah, a little bit, but I can still do it. Once we did 8 shows in festivals, you know, recently, and it was like really hard the first couple, but then it evened out again. Mm-hmm. I was getting better towards the end of it.
Is it harder to sing at this point or play bass?
No, I don't have any difficulty doing it. It tires me out more.
Gotcha.
Quicker.
You know? Do you ever see like a point where maybe you'd have somebody else play bass and you just sing? Could you even do that?
I don't know what to do with my hands. You know?
Yes. What do you do?
It's very different, you know, playing the guitar and just singing.
Yeah.
It's very, very different because I used to do that when we had Phil Anheuser. Phil would play bass and I used to sing this one song that I didn't like playing bass on, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but it was really, it's really tricky, you know. It's an art. Yeah. I'd say one of the best I've ever seen is probably Bruce Dickinson.
As a front man?
And Dave Grohl.
Yeah.
They are the ultimate front man.
Well, Dave has the guitar, though, right? Dave.
Yeah, but he's such a good front
man. Great front man, yeah.
I mean, he talks to the crowd and they just lap it up, you know.
Well, Hetfield's like that, too. I find James is real personable with the crowd also.
Yeah.
You know? But I think as an actual frontman, Bruce could be the best in metal.
One of them, anyway, for sure.
Who do you think about in rock and roll? Who's the best?
Well, Ozzy has such charisma about him. Ozzy walks on stage and you don't look at the band.
No.
You look at him. And I don't care. You know, some nights he's off key and that. It really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That's live
rock. Because it's Ozzy.
It's clapping.
And look what he went through. He went through a lot more drugs than me. He started earlier, you know, with Black Sabbath. They were going since 1972. I didn't start till 1975, you know.
Yeah, right.
You got 3 years on me, the bastard.
Did you guys ever hang out on that first tour and just get loaded?
A couple of times, yeah, but he was starting to withdraw. Then he got very withdrawn for a while, and then he came back a bit. And then when I came to live here, I wrote a couple of songs for him on the...
On the No More Tears record.
No More Tears album, and on Osmosis.
Right. But the No More Tears, I mean, Mom, I'm Coming Home, that could be his top 2 or 3 biggest songs. And
it was funny. Me and him was both doing interviews in this German festival in his tent, you know. And this guy said, so Ozzy, this Mama, I'm Coming Home, it's one of the most personal, heart-rending messages I have ever personally heard. How did you come to be able to write this? He said, he wrote it. He goes,
bubble burst.
Wah, 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 out under the door, you know.
So, I mean, that must have made you a couple bucks, the songs that you wrote.
I didn't get royalties. I sold them for a straight shot because I was broke.
Wow.
I sold them years in Motorhead. Our management just spent it all.
Oh, man.
We had all these big, elaborate stage things that you couldn't take in all the theatres, you know. Especially in America, we never had the bomber here. Yeah, we had a dummy locomotive on tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
And the drummer sat in front of the boiler, you know.
Okay. That's not a bad stage set.
One time we had a set of steps each side and a walk across the top. And I had this great idea. I thought I'd go up there and the lights would flicker for a bit and I'd go off and they'd stick a dummy up there and his head explodes, you know.
Did you do it?
No, okay. I never got around to it.
You never got around to it. Maybe you'll still get to that one of these
There's
days.
Another idea Mickey had. Is at the end of the solo, he throws a stick up in the air. And you've had 2 minutes and about 200 sticks will land them.
Well, you got, you know, the Lord Axsmith, the head of comedy, whatever it is, too. He told me a couple of good ones with bringing the donkey on stage. And
yeah, I know. It's freaking
sort of
funny.
He does.
Welsh wanker on his guitar strap. Yeah. Roger's bitch.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Are you enjoying this so far? I know I am. This is true rock and roll history with a rock and roll legend. More with Lemmy right now.
You got a great sense of humor, though. I mean, did you like, obviously, I mean, growing up in England, I grew up in Canada. Yeah. So the CBC was an offshoot of the BBC. So we saw all...
Monty Python.
And for me, it was Fawlty Towers.
That's great.
Still the best character of all time is Basil Fawlty.
Well, you know, the others were in, buddy. The Manuel was great.
Great, yeah. Too, yeah.
And the Major. The Major.
Whatever you do not mention the war.
Yeah, I must have liked it, you know, because I took her to see India, old boy. India, Major? It wasn't a time when people pulled a gun, the very mention of a bad word, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know. I mean,
it's got very touchy these days. Yeah. It's political correctness.
Right.
How you can shock people to death with one naughty word, you know.
Yeah. Where's some of the biggest countries for Motorhead? I mean, you guys have such a huge fan base.
Germany.
Yeah, that's the one.
Germany and, let's see, for a while, Japan, because we used to go over there more.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been over there for a while now. Sweden, partly because Mickey lives there, but partly when we were going over there before that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to be very good in France at one point. We used to tour a lot in France. But then the French record companies demanded that all the French bands sing in French.
Hmm?
Or they wouldn't put the records out.
Really?
Yeah, that's why you got all these rock groups singing in French at that period. You know,
no kidding.
Like 79, 80.
Really?
Yeah, it was fucking so stupid. Because you can be heard in Quebec,
mm-hmm.
you know, France, Montenegue. And Cambodia, you know, Vietnam. That's your recording public, you know.
Yeah, that's it. That's the extent of where you can
it's
play.
It's not going to work, is it, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about the, I mean, you mentioned that Motorhead didn't mean anything until a couple of years ago, which
we were known, people knew who we were, a lot of them, but we weren't a band that you stopped to listen to.
Sure.
We didn't sell any albums, it's the last one, really.
Yeah, and the last one was
our first American hit in the top 40.
Top 40, top
number 22. You know,
it's huge.
Pretty good for Motorhead.
But you've become an icon. You know, Lemmy.
Yeah,
the
I know
icon.
It's really weird. I don't know. You know, I don't know. People must be sure of something to worship. You know, but it's better than if they worship God. You know, I suppose. They say, "Yeah, Lemmy, you're God, man." I said, "No, God's taller."
But how is it for you to see yourself, like, in a video game or,
You get used to it, you know.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be a rock and roll star.
Mm-hmm.
Not a pop star.
Mm-hmm.
Not really a rock star. I like to be, you know, somebody who is admired for being a decent person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think most of it comes from.
Well, I think one of the things is that you are a decent person. You're always really nice and friendly. I mean, I'm sure you've got a angry side, but you know, the times we've hung out, I see you backstage at Golden Gods with all the young band guys that come up to you, always really nice. And
well, why not, man?
Yeah, right.
That's what's wrong with a lot of America. You know, you got to drive a Ram truck, you know, God's glory Ram, you know, until it breaks down, right? And then it's A Automobile Association of America.
Do you have a Lemmy action figure? I have one in my house. I can't
see
it. Yeah,
the silver one.
Oh, the silver one. Nice.
It was weird. They did a silver one, a gold one. Two flesh-colored ones of different outfits and different guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And a black one.
Like where Lemmy's
black? Everything was flat black.
Okay.
Guitar, figure, everything.
Did you have to sit there and get scanned?
Overkill.
Yeah. Overkill.
Overkill.
Did you have to get scanned for the action figure?
The what stand?
The computer scan. Like, did they have to scan your face?
Yeah. To stand on this revolving stage in the camera.
Yeah.
Got the whole angle. So that's actually me as I look then.
Yeah.
You know.
That's cool stuff. Man. I remember reading the story about when you mentioned you're talking about the action figure and asked if they're going to put a dick on it.
Yeah, and they said no. I said, "We're hardly going to see any action then, is it?"
I love that story. How important is it to you to still make new records and put out new music?
Well, it's what I do. It's mm-hmm. what I am. Mm-hmm. It's not a job. This is your life, you know, mm-hmm. as you know.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have another job and do this.
Right. You give it your all, right? Because a lot of bands now, like,
it's going to be everything you got, because it'll take that to make it, you know, and you've got to come out smiling, or it isn't worth doing in the first place.
Right.
You know, if it gets too much for you, then give it up, man, and go and be a sheet metal presser. Because you'll be more, you know, regular wages, and you'll get laid every night if you want to, you know, and have them cute kids, and next week we're hoping to get a council house, you know. So, you know, you can go and do that, but I couldn't do that. See, I just couldn't do it. My father got me a job at a factory when I was 15, and I left school, and to keep an eye on me, because he worked there as well, see, a hot point washing machine factory in Llandudno Junction. Which is like where God would put an enema if he, you know.
He'd put the tube.
If he had diarrhea. You know. So I went through that thing where, you know, you clock on at 7:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You're already working the machine by 7:34, you know.
Yeah.
And then you go all day with a break for lunch and a 5-minute break in the mornings and afternoons, and you're home by 6. That.
Yeah, and then 30 years later, they give you a gold watch.
And, yeah, I know. If you're lucky,
yeah.
If you're a star trainer, you know, worker. I saw a guy try to clean his machine while it was still going.
Mm-hmm.
He took his arm off of the elbow, you know. Because they have machines that, like them robots that make cars, right?
Yeah.
But miniature versions of it, they just stick the part in and then they go, you know.
Yeah.
And he like dozed off on the job or something. He tried to clean it while it was still going.
Oh, that could be it, right?
He wasn't even screaming when he went out. He's just going,
looking at his stump.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you, because the reason why I asked about the new records is a lot of bands like Aerosmith or Motley Crue say, like, it's too hard to make a new record. But then other bands like yourself or Saxon or Iron Maiden still putting out records on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Still important.
Well, that's what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
You play on the stage and the audience stays where it is, you know, and then you got to keep giving them stuff to like, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they pay your wages.
And it's fun for you, too, to play new material.
Oh, yes, of course,
you know?
It is.
I remember we went to a radio station, you and I, in Phoenix, back in about 2003. Remember that?
Yeah.
You guys were doing the Maiden tour. And we went into the record, the radio station, and they were going to play a Motorhead song. And he's like, we're going to play, here it is, Ace of Spades. You're like, you do realize that we have a new record. You could play something from that, too. And you had it in your back pocket.
Yeah,
and I think it was Inferno. Is it kind of a... I'm never going to say it's a curse, but is it kind of like a blessing,
it's a blessing
and sometimes
and
a
curse
to have such a huge song and that's all people want to hear?
It only went to number 4 in Britain. It didn't even get released here.
So what made that such a classic tune or such a popular tune?
I don't know. People just latched onto it.
Yeah.
To me, it's not special. I think it's like one of our songs.
Yeah. You have better songs. You have worse songs.
Yes.
Yeah.
We do have better songs. You know, I mean, the songs we're writing now are better, you know. That was the old band, you know, and there's all that. And so there's mostly people over 40 who like it the most, you know.
Yeah.
Lemmy, my man. Ace of Spades, man. Yeah, I see. Yeah, nothing worse.
Yeah.
But from Sacrifice, no, I won't say that. I'll say from Inferno onwards with Cameron, all our albums have been excellent.
I agree. I mean, it seems like each one is better than the last.
Yeah, well, this one is better than the others.
Aftershock, yeah.
I liked Inferno a lot, and I liked Murderizer.
Mm-hmm.
I liked all of them with him, you know. Kiss of Death was good. A lot of good songs on it.
Yeah, I remember you taught me, though, you said, make sure you always carry a copy of your new album when you go into a radio station.
Oh, yeah, because they won't have one.
They won't have one, yeah. And I always do that, man. And you're right. Maybe 8 times out of 10, they don't have it. Or they'll just have it, look it up digitally online.
And they got one song.
That's it, yeah. One song, maybe two
the
albums.
Thing, the record company are pushing at me.
Yeah. You know, so here you go.
And they haven't played it.
Yeah.
And they're trying to... Yeah.
Yeah. How
and they always turn the sound down in the booth, don't they, when they're playing the record.
Yeah, it's like, I want to hear it.
The DJs don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
What they're playing.
How important was it when you did Triple H's theme song, which was about probably 10 years ago or so, and that really, like, that took Motorhead
that,
to
that brought us to the public eye a bit.
Yeah.
The trouble was, whenever we played live with him, he always lost.
You're a jinx, man.
We played with him in New York, and he lost.
Mm-hmm.
We played with him in L.A., and he lost. We played with, they flew us down to Texas, and he lost there too, Austin.
Man, see? If he would play, if Ozzy would have played, they only would have won.
And then the last one I went to, we actually won.
Okay.
And I said, well, it's about time, man, you know.
Did you play for him that night?
No, no.
Well, see, that's why he won.
Yeah, that's why he won.
Yeah. How did that come to be? I mean, I think he was a huge Motorhead fan. Did he approach you guys? And
yeah, he apparently somebody played in Bomber in the car driving somewhere.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did you?
Those are the guys I want to do my theme song.
Had you ever been familiar with wrestling? Did you used to watch it all in England, or did you know about it in the States? Or
what, wrestling?
Wrestling, yeah.
Oh, we had British wrestling, yeah. We had
Were you the, ever a fan of it?
It was really, no.
Okay.
It was too choreographed, you know. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to be really careful with it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it looks really false, you know, and you don't want it to look false.
Well, it's
I mean, it can be three-quarters rehearsed, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to be false.
It's got to be like anything in show business. You have to commit to it.
Yeah.
It's like going to see a band. If they don't believe it,
if you get hit over the back with a metal chair every yeah. night, you're going to miss it when you stop, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not quite the same, is it? Who was the first one to do that?
To get hit with a metal chair?
Hit somebody with a metal chair.
I remember seeing that in the 70s. I grew up a wrestling fan. I remember
probably
seeing
that. That big guy, wasn't he?
Well, these
not Big Show.
Andre the Giant?
No.
Hulk Hogan?
No, no. It was he was still going in your era.
I'm trying to think who he might be.
I think he seems to have left it behind a bit now. He Rock. Might still be doing it. I don't follow
Steve
it.
Steve Austin or The Rock. I mean, I remember in the 70s going to wrestling, there'd be big guys, like said, big beer bellies, just kind of older
I know,
guys.
Yeah, and white. Yeah,
exactly. It'd be kind of almost
ridiculous suits on.
Yeah.
But like, the Mexicans have got the prize for that.
Oh, yeah?
Those masks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Lucha Libre.
I didn't know about them. We did a gig in Bakersfield.
Uh-huh.
And we played in this Mexican, like,
bull arena.
Wrestling ring.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and we played in the ring, and they were all around us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these photographs of, and they have weird names too. I don't remember them, but they were so strange.
Oh yeah, they all got the strange names, you know.
Doctor Uncle and things like that.
Do you guys have a big fan base in South America? I mean, people are crazy down there for.
They are crazy down yeah. there. It's freaky. The first time we went to Argentina, we played with the Ramones. Just us and the Ramones, no support band.
Wow.
And
who was on top? You guys or the Ramones? Who was last?
Ramones.
Last, okay.
53,000 people showed up. And they were doing football songs like, and when you hear 53,000 people doing that, it's very effective.
Ole, 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 ole.
Yeah, yeah. I came out at one point, and that thing that Ozzy said it was happening outside my room, a circle of them with the monk's robes on, you know.
Outside your room?
What the fuck are you guys doing? You know, okay? You know.
Yeah, okay. Manuel. Okay. Manuel.
KC what?
Yeah. Mrs. Richards.
Yes.
Mrs. Richards, is this a piece of your brain?
Yes. We were expecting, this is Torquay, as advertised, we were expecting the Hanging Garden to Babylon.
Yeah.
Herds of wildebeest sweeping majestically. What? What? You heard that, didn't you? Yeah.
Do you have that on DVD?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's talk one more thing about Metallica and how much respect the band has had for you and how much you've done with them over the last few years.
Yeah.
I mean, Lars is obviously a huge Motorhead fan.
Right from the get-go.
Right from the get-go. Did he ever come see you guys back? I mean, I used, used to follow Deep Purple around. And
well, he showed up at the hotel when we first came to L.A. with Motorhead.
Really?
And he showed up, and that was with Brian Robertson, you know.
So it was like 81 or something?
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was with Eddie.
Yeah.
81 it would be. 80 or 81. No, 81 was the year we did Ozzy. Uh-huh. It would have been 82. And he came over with Cliff Burton, you know. And he said he was the president of our West Coast fan club, and he was the vice president, you know. And there's only them two.
So he was the president, and Cliff was the vice president.
Well, if you started, you're going to be the
boss,
aren't you?
Yeah. And they had two members.
It's like I formed my own band because I was sick of getting fired, you know.
Yeah.
And then you can't fire me now, you bastards.
What did you think of Metallica when you first heard them?
when I first heard them, they chopped and changed rhythms too much for me.
You mean to make tempo changes?
Because I like a groove, you know? Although we've done it more since that became fashionable, but we've never been every song, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but then after, let's see, Master of Puppets, they were unstoppable after that.
Well, when you talk about, like, say, Kill 'Em All, I mean, as heavy as Motorhead and fast as Motorhead was in, like, 77, Metallica kind of upped the ante in, like, 83. Yeah. Heaviest band, and then this band's even faster than Motorhead.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, they're going to be younger.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I used to wring my shirt out with sweat, you know, into a bucket after gigs.
Yeah,
I've done that. Now I don't sweat much at all, hardly.
Yeah, but you get older, and that's just how...
But I my legs retain water now, so I think it's going in instead of being sweated out.
So, just a couple more questions. What do you see for yourself? Are you ever going to stop, Len? Do you ever want to stop?
I never want to stop, but obviously you'll come to a stage where you can't do it anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the legs go all together, I'll be in a wheelchair, and I ain't going on no stage in no wheelchair. Mm-hmm, they'll have to strap me to a frame and wheel me out there.
Like Hannibal Lecter, they could just put you on one of those moving carts.
Right,
and
then trolleys, yeah. Difficult singing with the mask on, though.
That's right, yeah. Do you ever get any inspiration from the Stones and from McCartney still going at 71, 72, still rolling?
Well, the Jagger's a lot fitter than me.
Mm-hmm.
Keith isn't.
Yeah.
And Ronnie isn't.
Yeah.
Because Ronnie was in a band called The Birds, you know, way back. B-I-R-D-S.
Oh, okay, not the B-Y-R-D-S.
No. Mm-hmm. He was in the English Birds. It used to be the Thunderbirds, and then it just went the Birds.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sort of half mud, half long hair, you know.
Which he still has.
But they were great.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were great. We used to follow him around. And I remember we went to see him in Manchester, and then we couldn't get a ride home. And they let us sleep in their van.
Oh.
With all the guitars in it, you know. Because you carried everything.
Yeah.
In one van.
In one van, right. And you slept in it too.
I mean, there's only two of us, Rodie and Hendrix.
Oh, wow. You guys would set up everything.
Well, we didn't have a big PA. So
yeah, but still.
You used the house system.
Wow.
How bad must it have been? And yet it didn't seem to be.
Well, it's like the Beatles at Shea Stadium played through the announce system.
Yeah, right. Well, they played through them everywhere.
Wow.
Because they only had Vox AC30s. But the amazing thing is when they played DC, it's four-sided theatre, right? And after the first song, they moved around to this side, so the amps are facing away from them. And all the screaming... They couldn't hear a thing.
Nothing.
And it's perfect.
Yeah, when you watch it back, they're perfectly in tune.
Perfectly. Harmonies.
Yeah.
Everything.
That's just because they would play together so many times. They're so tight, right?
Well, a lot of people have played together that many times because they didn't last that long.
Yeah.
62 to, what, 69?
Maybe. If that, or the Beatles, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Right.
And they played their last gig in 1960. Nine, was it? No, 66.
66 in San Francisco. They just closed Candlestick Park. McCartney closed
Park,
it.
Yeah. So that's only, what, 4 years?
On the main stage, yeah. And maybe six, I think they started gigging in 60 or 61.
Yeah.
In Hamburg, right?
Yeah.
If you saw them at the Cavern Club, it was probably 61.
I saw them at the
Cavern
in 62.
62.
And they were still fulfilling old contracts.
Right.
You know?
Did you ever meet any of the Beatles?
I met George and Ringo. I never wanted to meet John because I thought he would never get a word in, you know. And McCartney was always there. He was very awkward on stage, McCartney always, when he was announcing. Thank you very much. We'd like to play a song off our new LP.
This next song?
Yeah, and this song is called... he was really awkward. And Lennon used to do that spastic thing, you know.
Yeah.
When you hold the clap around, hand your hand and stamp your feet.
He would just take the piss out of everything.
Oh, no.
Because they couldn't hear anything, right?
No.
Yeah. You see Shea Stadium, he's playing I'm Down with his, elbow. And
that was the Hollywood Bellman.
Yeah. Oh, okay, Hollywood Bellman, yeah. Yeah, you could tell he was just good. He was over it, you know?
Neville, who was with me and Hendrix's crew, went to work for Apple after.
Oh, really?
And I used to get all the outtakes that came out on that Let It Be, you know?
Oh, okay. From the movie, you mean, or from the
no,
album?
just the records.
Okay,
yeah. But like, you know, there's a lot of good stuff on there that they never released.
Mm-hmm.
stuff like Lodi Miskelodi, you know, all them.
There's a lot of songs that you hear about that they've never released, and I'm wondering why they won't just open that vault, you know, put it out.
Well, because, you know, they got very perfectionist.
Yeah.
And those were mostly recorded in a bad acoustic room with terrible equipment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a place where people didn't like him, so, you know.
What was George like? Did you have a conversation with him, or did you just meet him in passing? He seemed like he was cool.
Just said hi, you know. I know what they went through. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to be one of them.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah, you're not going to be one of those fanboys, right?
Not one of them people that camps out in your bathroom after climbing through your window.
He came in through the bathroom window.
Yeah,
right.
But, I mean, it was ridiculous, you know. Mm-hmm. They were really unable to go anywhere. They were on the Eamon Andrews show one night. He was this famous interviewer person. He was like our Johnny Carson for a while. Mm-hmm. And he said, so tell me, George, is it difficult for you to go to restaurants and things now? And George said, no, I was there the other day. He said, where? He said, restaurants. That's really English, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what they were, though. Very cheeky, you know.
Very English. But yeah, he didn't give a f*** about anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't come to the States till they were number one.
Mm-hmm.
You know that?
I know.
They refused.
That's the audacity they had and the confidence they had.
It's like, yeah, arrogance. Come to a, to a number,
yeah, arrogant young. And then when they came over, press conference, those people came wanting to hate them.
Yeah.
And they just wouldn't stop with the remarks and the jokes and the comments, you know.
Yeah.
They didn't care. Because they were a gang.
Oh, yeah, he's Ringo. I'm really Ringo, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have that relationship now with the guys in your band, with Phil and Mick? You guys have been together for 25 years. I mean, you must really like being with them.
Phil's been in for 30.
Yeah.
Most of his life.
Yeah.
Has been a Motorhead. And they say the classic lineup is Eddie Clarke and Phil Taylor. Okay. Eddie was in the band for 7 years. You know?
Yeah. Because that's when you did Ace of Spades.
I mean, if he's getting the George Cross, Phil should get the Medal of Honor.
Couple last questions. What songs do you guys play live that people still go nuts for? Like, what are your favorite ones to do that always get the biggest reactions?
Ace of Spades, obviously.
Yeah.
Overkill.
Mm-hmm.
Killed by Death. They always sing along with that. Everybody,
it's a classic one, What a great song title, too. Killed by Death.
Yeah, I know. That was from the Goon Show.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was killed by death. I think he said murdered by death, because there were being policemen in that.
That doesn't sound as good.
Luke's a footprint. We haven't got time for your impersonations now.
What was Stay Clean about?
Stay Clean was about staying true to yourself, really. You know, I know the law, because everybody knows the law. Mm-hmm. That's why they did the evil in the dark. Right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't get many murderers stalking people in daylight, do you? Right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows what's right and wrong, and I don't give a fuck what anybody says. You don't need to mollycoddle murderers in jail.
You don't need to mollycoddle?
Yeah, it means pamper, you know.
Whatever. Great word.
Yeah.
Write that down.
Yeah.
He's taught me something.
Blackguard.
Blackguard?
Blackguard.
Oh, blackguard.
It's all one word, blackguard.
What's that?
It's a bastard.
A rogue? Yeah, okay.
A rogue, yes. A hobbledehoy. Hobbledehoy is a peasant, you know.
What is that? Is that Old English? Or is that slang? Or
Well, it was, you know, still in use when I was a kid. Mm. But we've moved a lot on since then. America ruined us.
They screwed you up for good. What's your favorite Motorhead record? I mean, besides Aftershock.
Oh, I don't know, man.
It's hard to say.
You always say the last one.
Yeah.
You know? I really don't know. I mean, there's good songs on all of them. And on some there's a bit of filler. I didn't like Iron Fist, you know, because there's some great songs on it, but there's some real turkeys as well. I think we were getting tired of being the glamour boys in England, and we wanted to go to America, like, you know. And we were just on the brink of going there, I think, when Iron Fist came out, weren't we?
Mm-hmm.
That came out in 80, that's the year that he left. Yeah, we'd been there. We'd been over here about four times, I think, with Eddie and Phil. And they were cripple tours, you know, like the Ozzy Osbourne tour. It was easy money compared with the ones we did on our own.
What do you mean by that?
Five nights on, one night off.
Oh, yeah, because you got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
A night off means you're spending money.
Well, we were spending money, all right.
Yeah.
You know, because we always had fairly good money, but we couldn't get released here for ages. And then we had people like Legacy, records out in New York. They're awful. You know?
Just smaller record companies?
I don't know. They seem to get a lot of English bands on that label. Probably because we were so extreme for America then.
Right.
Because America didn't get extreme, you know, metal until much later than England. Didn't get punk so much later than England.
Especially the combination of you guys. And
the Sex Pistols could not have happened in the States. Nearest you had to them was like the Bad Brains or somebody.
I think it's like what you said. If you don't, you know, it's hard to translate to Middle America and, you know, Alabama and Arkansas.
Yeah.
When you do something so extreme. That's why rock and roll is still always kind of underground.
I know. That's the way I like it too.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've always liked being an outlaw. You know. That's why I dress as one. Because I am one.
Yeah. How do you mean by that? Just quickly, like a rebel?
Well, it's like Marlon Brando in The Wild One.
Mm-hmm.
What are you rebelling against, Johnny? What have you got?
On that note, man, Lem, great talking to you, man.
Thank you.
This has been very cool to sit in your house like this.
Nice to see you.
I really did hang out with Lemmy at his apartment in Los Angeles. We spent nearly 2 hours talking. I was there for almost 4 hours, and it was just amazing. I mean, to be invited into Lemmy's house, like I said, he's got all of the Nazi memorabilia, all of the artifacts on the wall, Eva Braun's cigarette lighter, Hitler's cutlery. And just to sit there and hang out, I realized after a while that Lemmy, you know, he is an icon. He is a rock and roll hero, a pioneer, a legend. He's just a guy, and maybe even a little bit lonely that day, and happy that I was over to be hanging out with him, and it was a blast. And afterwards, he said, I like having conversations with guys who can come back with additional information about my stories. I think he dug the fact that that I'm also a Fawlty Towers fan, an English humor, English comedy fan. I think he appreciated that. And we had a really, really good time. And he said, come back anytime you want to. So anytime you get a chance to hang out with Lemmy and have a couple vodkas and just sit next to a dude who's seen so much and done so much. And I've known Lemmy for years. He's always been very cool to me, very supportive. And the fact that he did talk as Jericho, I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Very, very timely, considering that Lemmy just played with Dave Grohl at his birthday bash just a few nights ago at the LA Forum. How cool was that? Surprise guests, including 4 Talk is Jericho alumni. Paul Stanley was there. Zach Wilde was there. Slash was there. Lemmy was there. Now I just got to get David Lee Roth, who was also there. Hit at David Lee Roth up on the Twitter and let him know that he should do Talk is Jericho. Lemmy, thank you so much, man. You are a true gentleman, a true rock and roll legend, and what a great guy. And long live Lemmy. Hopefully he goes on for a long, long, long time. And I can't wait to go back to his house and hang out and look at the rest of his artifacts. Because he should open a museum. Like I said, it literally would take hours. And he knows about every single piece of history that's on his wall. He could be a museum curator. Here's your museum curator, Lemmy. I hope you dug it. I know I did. Don't forget Hulk Hogan last week, part 1, part 2. If you're a wrestling fan, if you're not, you need to check it out. It's a monumental show. Ryback, JBL, Paul Stanley, Snake Sabo, Bischoff, and Pritchard. Don't forget January 25th. It's the great debate. Bruce Pritchard versus Eric Bischoff debating the Monday Night Wars. I will be moderating it. We will be recording it for a future Talk is Jericho. January 25th at Dave and Buster's in Philadelphia, Columbus Avenue. It's at 1 p.m. Come check it out before you go to the Royal Rumble, before you watch the Royal Rumble. And I will be there at 10 a.m. for a special VIP signing. Go to rfvideo.com for all information. You do not want to miss this. Pritchard versus Bischoff, the great debate on the Monday Night Wars, live in person, Dave and Buster's, January 25th, moderated by Chris Jericho. Also live and in person, Cinderblock Party World Tour 2015 in the UK, Ireland, Europe. It's with the Dirty Youth, one of the biggest up-and-coming bands in England right now. Starts March 4th in Belfast, Ireland, 5th, Cork, 6th, Dublin, 7th, Nottingham, 8th, Wolverhampton, 9th, Manchester, 10th, Glasgow, 11th, London, 12th, Bristol, 13th, Exeter, 14th, Southampton, 15th, Brighton. Head on over to the mainland
mainland, Paris, France, March 17th. We will be playing no matter what. We played a show in Paris in 2010 when there was riots in the city. Lady Gaga canceled her show. Fozzy did not. We will be there. We will play for you, the fans of Fozzy in Paris. We will not let you down, I promise. 18, Pratteln, Switzerland. Cesaro had to teach me how to pronounce that. Pratteln, Switzerland. 19, Munich. 20, Mannheim. 21st, Bochum, Germany. Those are the dates of the Cinderblock Party World Tour. You want to get tickets. You want to get information about the shows. You want to get the best VIP experience in the world. That's FozzyRock.com. And don't forget RFVideo.com for Pritchard versus Bischoff. I'll see you guys this weekend in St. Louis, Las Vegas, Houston. Once again, thanks to Lemmy for his hospitality, for allowing me into his house, into his home, and for talking to me as long as he did. I smoked a cigarette with him. I haven't smoked a cigarette in probably 20 years. But if Lemmy wants to have a cigarette and ask you if you want one, you damn well do it. All right? You got it? Lemmy wants to have a vodka and ask if you want to have one, you damn well have one. You know me. I got no problem having a Gigi. Thanks to you, too, for schwaz on my podcast. I know you got thousands of podcasts you can schwaz from. The fact you join me for twice a week, I never take that for granted. I thank you very much. I do everything I can to book the best guests for you. I travel around the world, literally, to get the best guests for you. You want more guests? You want more first-time podcast guests? You want more guests that I think you're going to be interested in hearing? Stick around right here. I'm in Los Angeles right now. Wait until you see who I got on tap next week. On Friday, I got someone even better. WWE Tag Team Champions, the Usos, are going to be here. What do you think of that? You like this show? You go to Amazon, podcast1.com. You click on the Keeper Podcast free banner at the top of the page. You click on Talk is Jericho. You see all three of my Amazon links in the UK, in the USA, in the Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. Listen, no extra fees or hidden challenges. You're just getting your shopping done. You're helping me out in the process. Thank you, guys. I appreciate everything that you do for me, and I'm going to continue to do the best I can for you. That's another amazing edition of Talk is Jericho. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. See you Friday for the WWE Tag Team Champions, the Usos, and a big Uso, Uso, yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.